Yeah. Today we talking about that dream team, man. What y'all think, huh? It's Planet Sandbox Radio. I'll be your host, Davu Wale. John Stockton versus Isaiah. The Last Dance. Et cetera, et cetera.
What did you think about that?
Let's go.
Like a Tarantino film, they was jumping around, man. I couldn't even keep up, like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
I know. They go from 98 back to 92, back to, but it was great. I especially like the dream team aspect, because a good friend of mine told me about the situation at the exhibition game that they had at practice between Magic and Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Told me about that, how they were talking trash to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And just went off. Like, but I didn't know Magic actually went to him and was like, hey, let's better turn up or something like that. But that was great, man. And you know, of course,
it seemed, not to cut your wizard, it seemed like Magic was the reluctant alpha. Like he was the one that was, you know, he had five chips. You know what I mean? He was the winningest player on the team, you know, at that point. You get what I'm saying? So he was reluctant to just be like, all right, this new school cat is the face of the league until something like that. It's just kind of like a rite of passage, you know what I mean? So I can't really knock Mike and all that, you know what I mean? I mean Magic and all that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, Mike just had that mentality where it was like, I'm not bowing down to anybody. I guess remember when we saw like the first two episodes, I guess it came from home. Like, you know, how his father viewed him, and how his brother Larry, I heard that, because that's what they, I used to hear that Larry, like,
it was better than him, like, right?
Yeah, it was better than him. So I guess he got that from home, like, so.
Mm-hmm. That structure, that work ethic and everything, man.
Absolutely.
But listen, I want to get into this right quick, you know what I mean? Because I know we talk about Last Dance and all that, but me and you was talking a one-on-one thing, man, you know what I'm saying? And I kind of wanted to revisit this because, you know, everybody's talking now about how brother Isaiah Thomas was left off that team. You get what I'm saying? And I personally said, you know what I'm saying, that it was a crime that John Stockton was on that team and not my guy. But you personally was kind of like, you see the stats, it wasn't too much of a difference. Are you doubling down on that statement? Have you had time to think clearly on what you were saying to me the other day, man?
All right, here's what I was saying. No. I'm still standing firm on what I was saying.
All right.
Here's what I was saying. I think at that time, maybe Isaiah had a few more years over John Stockton. Yeah, he was more proven. He won whatever. I'm asking this now. Are we going by a position standpoint, or are we just going by a player standpoint? Because no disrespect, this guy is a Hall of Famer, but Chris Mullin was also on the team, too.
Yeah, Chris Mullin was on the team. I can't really say he deserved to be there over Dominique, but that's a whole other story.
No. That's why I was asking: was it a player perspective or was it a position perspective? Because every time people do the John Stockton, they'll say Isaiah Thomas. I mean, I get it because I'm guessing that's what you're saying, like position for position. So okay, Isaiah Thomas achieved greatness. You know, he was proven. He was a champion. Two time, right? Now, like I said, He was a major staple. He was in a well-known city. The demographic, he was going to be supported by black people. No disrespect. John Stockton was in Utah, one of those cities that's not regarded as much. People don't really care for it. It's a small city in regards to not getting marketing or whatever have you. Were they doing their thing? Was he still doing his numbers? Absolutely. It's just more about the impact, I guess, people view with Isaiah, because when they talk about him coming out hobbling on one leg and doing damage and stuff like that, I'm saying look at the longevity and the consistency. Now, at that time, we can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
But his numbers are still up there. His numbers rival Isaiah.
It doesn't rival Isaiah in the most important part, and that is winning, brother. winning. That shit means something. I just feel like people move the finish line too much when it comes to certain people. Like you know, the reason Christian Laettner was on that team over Shaq, why? Because they said it came down to the fact that he won, right? He wasn't a better player than Shaquille.
NCAA player overall. He played 4 years.
You think he was a better player than Shaq?
NCAA?
No, sir. No way he was better than Shaquille O'Neal, man. I gotta disagree with you.
No, I'm talking about NCAA.
Yeah, I'm talking about NCAA. No way Christian Laettner was better than Shaquille O'Neal, brother. No way. Shaquille O'Neal, I believe a young Shaquille O'Neal couldn't have started because Pat Ewing and David Robinson were serious. But he could have been the reserve center on that team. What position did Christian Laettner play? What position did he play?
I think he probably played center. I
know like a stretch league, four or something like that.
Played, I think times in the league he played the four or the five or dependent. But I think his main position, see, in college he probably played the center.
Yeah, I believe that.
I think he played the four.
Like a stretch four type thing.
Yeah, and I think he switched out, sometimes went to the center position all dependent on the team.
But he was a stretch four who couldn't pick and pop.
I agree with you, brother. That's what I'm saying. It's really all about chasing what they want. They want. All right. So if the argument was, all right, a lot of people aren't getting along with Isaiah. Let's go with somebody who might be a little bit more of an acquired chase. But in my opinion, they didn't. If he can't add up to Isaiah, he's not too far.
His nephew was wearing a Bulls jersey, Michael Jordan Bulls jersey.
Okay.
He said, hey, what are you doing? We're in Chicago, this is my team. It's his nephew. He not really understanding that the great Isaiah Thomas plays with Detroit. We don't wear that, we wear this. But I'm from Chicago. I'm down with the Bull movement. Isaiah was mad at that. Not to Michael personally. In his brain, every time I play against this dude, I'm gonna try to go off so my nephew sees. This is the jersey you should wear.
Let's come up. You know that the book is out by Magic Johnson. Get the quote out there. Magic Johnson writes, Isaiah killed his own chances when it came to the Olympics. Nobody on that team wanted to play with him. Michael Jordan didn't want to play with him. And these are Magic's words. Scottie Pippen wanted no part of him. Bird wasn't pushing for him. Karl Malone didn't want him. Who was saying we need this guy? Nobody. Is that accurate?
Sure is accurate. Sounds pretty true. You know, we had plenty of point guards. I mean, we had John Stockton, we had Magic. You know, there was really no room for him, to be honest with you. You know, we had some of the greatest point guards in the game, and I think the team was assembly based on, you know, the players that we could get in certain positions. And I think the position that he played in was, it was taken. It was just no playing space there for him. And, you know, it's somebody had to be left off of that team. A lot of good players, great players, Hall of Famers were left off of that team. I'm very fortunate that I was able to join that team and be a part of it. And I'm happy for that and blessed. But the flip side of it, everyone couldn't make the team.
That's some bullshit, Scotty.
I disagree with all that. I think the guy gets there on his own merit, even though in an Olympic scheme, it's all about camaraderie. You have to get along with your teammates. Mm-hmm. And because he was alienated from those guys, I don't think anybody else had a problem with it. David Robinson, myself, Patrick, we had no problem with Isaiah. Isaiah played 11 seasons, guys, and was an all-star every single season. One of the best point guards to ever play the game. And so he deserved to be on that team, especially with his head coach as our head coach, Chuck Daly. And so the reason he was not was because we'd be together for long stretches of time, and you had to get along with your teammates.
Thank you, Clyde. Politics as usual. Just what we thought.
One thing, at that time, Isaiah and I were not friends. We didn't support each other. And so, when you have to have 10 guys on a team, let's first start with the 10, okay? Let's start with the 10. I've never seen a guy score 25 points in a quarter like Isaiah did against my Lakers in the 1988 NBA Finals. So we know Isaiah, the talent, is off the chart, right? John Stockton could never score 25 points in a quarter like that. You know, we understand that. But now let's get to the fact. You have to be with each other for 2 months. And it was 4 or 5 guys he just had problems with. He was unfortunately not going to be a part of the Dream Team because of those problems. Because we all had to live with each other for 2 months, practice with each other, hang out with each other, all of those things.
So you admit you was one of them dudes, huh, Magic? So, basically my whole point about the Isaiah thing, man, was if the criteria itself was being a winning player, being one of the most elite players in the league, then that basically just came down to, you know, nobody, whoever it was, I just think it was a real cowardly way, you know what I mean? Because, I mean, here we are some 30 years later and still ain't nobody come out and just say, yeah, it was me. I was the one who put a stop to that. I ain't want him on there. Everybody's still ducking and dodging around the situation. I think that's kind of what just made it worse. If Mike would have came out and said, come on, y'all seen what he did to me. There's no way we would have got along out there. We in Barcelona. I'm not trying to be around that man. And then when you look at the dynamic of the practices, right? You see, Magic was on his way out and he knew it. So if you look at that practice, even though him and Barkley went hard at him, I mean, Magic was one of the first ones afterwards to be like, well, I guess we shouldn't have messed with that man. You're a bad boy. See, Magic got that attribute to him. If I can't beat him, I'm going to join him. I'm going to be right beside him. I'm going to be you know what I mean? But Isaiah, I don't think he got the chance to do that, because I haven't really heard anybody, as far as personal players, come out and say, listen, Isaiah was bad for me. Look at his relationship with James Dolan. Look, he almost got Stephon Marbury kicked out of New York, partying and playing with the ladies and all that. Jalen Rose is on ESPN basically saying, fuck Mike, wearing the Detroit Pistons jerseys and all that, talking about this was my let. So obviously his impact, you know what I mean, in that greater Midwest area is phenomenal. And I think for no reason but that, what he meant to the Chi-Town area, being from West Chicago, putting the Detroit Pistons on the map. I don't believe they've ever won anything before. Come on, and his route to greatness was beating the very people that the league were propping up to be the face of the league. So it's like, I feel like it was more politics. You can't really like a guy like that. You can't really like a guy like that. He's a giant killer when you look at it. Like, you know what I'm saying?
We agree. Absolutely. Absolutely. What I think, like you said, what I think happened is, okay, I think, yes, others may have had issues with Isaiah Thomas, but I think Mike was probably at the helm of it. Remember, he did say who's going to be playing. Granted, like you said, he never mentioned the name, but
And even with here we go. Now, do you not see how something like that could open up the door for situations like that? Because basically, if everybody ain't on Mike, you know what? You know what I'm saying? It kind of shoots down the competitive nature with them. And I believe if you look at it, everybody on that team that was on the Dream Team, basically, the only one that beat Mike was Larry Bird. Nobody else on that team beat Mike.
You get what I'm saying? So again, I believe it was a lot of people on that team who kind of acquiesced to the fact that this is the best player in the world, and they couldn't have somebody on that team that was like, well, I seen better. Because if you look at Isaiah to this day, he still put Kareem Abdul-Jabbar ahead of Mike. He still put, I believe, Magic Johnson ahead of Mike. And I don't know if it's Oscar Robertson or Bill Russell, but he doesn't have Mike ranked in his top three. As far as players that he's played against, you know? So, you know, I can see the...
I don't think it was necessarily players that he played against, was it? Or was it?
Yeah, he put it on the list as, you know, players that he played. I think he had Mike listed at number five and everything.
But right? I could understand that, though. And see, people always think it's a hating thing. What it is that... Listen, like you said, he learned from the Celtics and the Lakers or something like that. So when they get that mind put up, that look as if, oh, we didn't beat people up and this and that, and like, we didn't see Kansas, something like that, he learned certain things on the team. So you're going to hold them in higher regard. The Bulls learned from the Pistons. They're going to get tough, but they may not have to beat people up so much. But that would have looked bad, especially with Jordan being the face of the league. Like you said, Isaiah was a giant slayer. He felt like, oh, this is what we got to do in order to survive. This is what we had to withstand, and that's how these teams win the ship. So this is what we're going to do. Like you said, now we're going to fall in line with what they did in order to win. So he acquiesced to some degree as far as taking that blueprint and elevating it to, in order to win.
And you know what's crazy? I think... Isaiah and Bill Laimbeer bring up some interesting points, because if you look at it, right, I feel like David Stern and the league were very eager to kind of brush past that phase of the Detroit Pistons because of image-wise, they wasn't trying to go into that direction. It's basically street ball. They were playing jail ball. You know what I'm saying? So with that being said, I think there were certain pressures in the boardroom to just, like, if you look at the draft that broke up Detroit afterwards, like, I think they lost Rick Mahorn and one other person. I think Rick Mahorn, he went to some team in the expansion draft, like, the very next year, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, so that was a team that didn't even get to come back. I think they lost, Adrian somebody. Don't give me the line, man.
Was it him?
Yeah, I think he wasn't. I don't think he was around for the second go around. You get what I'm saying? To be honest with you, man. But you know, the league stepping in and changing the rules on the pick and pop, and you know, just it's just after a while, you know, it's just like you know, coming from where we come from, I think they changed certain rules about, you know, like whether it's the offensive 3 seconds or 5 seconds or something like that, to kind of, you know, to deter that. And then, you know, some of the greatest rivals of, you know, Mike, one of the greatest rivals, my team, the Knicks team, basically adopted the philosophy of the Detroit Pistons, but they didn't have the mental toughness to finish out games like Detroit did. So I just think, you know, a lot of people, kind of like, want to just put brute emphasis on what Detroit was doing, but for them to actually finish the season and win back-to-back chips, there was a great deal of strategy behind what they were doing. Like, if you even listen to Isaiah break down the Jordan rules, he didn't say anything along the lines of what Dennis Rodman was saying. Dennis Rodman simply was like, yo, listen, before he get in the air, you got to put him on his ass. Isaiah is talking about strategic basketball shit. Like, he doesn't like to go left, and if he doesn't pass the ball, like, he, you know what I'm saying, certain things, like, you know what I'm saying? So this it just lets you know, maybe, I just kind of feel like maybe Isaiah got a bad rap for being a competitor.
Well, he did. Mm-hmm. Because, like you said, he still wanted to be the rebel. He probably was like, yo, I'm not kissing Stern's ass. I'm not doing this. I'm not going this route. Y'all do what y'all do. I'm staying pat. Kind of like to this day, like, Damian Lillard was like, yo, if players want to go, this team go here and there to try to win the chip, that's fine. But I'm staying here. So whatever, if somebody want to come to me, that's fine. You know what I mean? So that's I get that notion. That's basically what that was, I believe.
Hmm.
I believe that was the major part of that.
Man, with all this basketball talk, man, I definitely don't think 10 episodes is going to be enough. Let me ask you something. Do you think we'll have basketball again this year? Will we get to see this season finished out? Or is this a done deal to Christmas? What do you think?
I think just from a financial standpoint, economic standpoint, they have to. These arenas aren't making money with that. And my own question is like, why? Like, what exactly is the holdup? Are you, like, what exactly was it that you, because if you're going to do fanless basketball, I'm sure you took the proper precautions of making sure that your arena is clean. You did your sanitization, you did everything you need to do. What exactly is the situation, or do you just want to have it in one specific location?
Yeah, and I don't think a lot of the players, I think a great, you got to keep in mind that a great deal of these players are millionaires. Basically, they're well off. These are people who are privileged at this point, like, you know. So a great deal of them are anti just being subjugated to one specific location for a 2 to 3 month period, isolated from their families, can't travel. And, you know, you have that aspect of the game. And then you also have the aspect of the game to where it's like, you know, the NBA and most sports is like traveling circuses, man. It's not just the athletes, you get what I'm saying, that's on the road. You know, you got security people that take care of them. You got handlers. You got therapists. It's just a traveling circus, man. It's the entourage for the whole experience. And, you know, if one person in the organization catches that, You know, it's basically going to lead to another shutdown, man. That's why I believe everybody's eyes are on, you know, the Korean baseball, organization right now, you know, because I hear they're about to start their league up, you know, towards the end of the month, you know what I mean? So, you know, but this is a situation to where you got to look at it with Korea. Like, this is a country that's, you know, averaging less than 10 coronavirus deaths a day, like right now. So, you know, completely different rules, completely different politics. I mean, when they say shut down the streets and everything is shut down. Like, it's not like out here where people are protesting on the beach and saying, what about my rights? Like, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, that's how they was able to kind of curb that, I believe, anyway. Like, so like I said, people are going to keep eyes on things like that, how that works. But even the organization, the elders in the Korean Baseball League said to themselves, like, their greatest fear is that if one person contracts the virus in the situation, it would lead to a sit down, an immediate sit down, and they would have to reevaluate whether it's worth, you know. So it's so much, it's so delicate, it's such a delicate thing, man. Hopefully we'll get some sports, man.
I have a question in regards to that.
Shoot,
shoot. Let's say we do that, okay. So you're going on with the proper precautions all the way to December. What's to stop somebody from possibly contracting that then? You understand what I'm saying?
Brother, this is uncharted territory, man.
Now you're going back into cold weather. So what I'm saying is there something that y'all are manipulating, apparently? You understand what I'm saying? And we're just trying to push it back to whatever, because what makes December so okay to where a person may not contract it?
Uncharted territory, brother, because I don't quite frankly think anybody really knows what to expect. I mean, you know, not to take it too far away from sports, if you're following the president's daily and weekly addresses, it seems like more information is coming to the surface daily. So, you know, how could the sports teams possibly judge on, you know, when operations and business is going to get back to normal? Like, you know, even with the velvet rope kind of being taken back, so to speak, like, it's still the whole dynamic of, do the fans feel safe coming back out to large gatherings like this, and where, you know, 16, 17,000 people, you know what I'm saying? Like, what are the odds, you know what I mean? The odds that somebody in there is a carrier or who has, you know, who has a trace for the it's very high. So it's like, I just think organization and sports as we know it, bro, you know, might not be the same.